What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Oh Word with Corey Elijah. It's your host, Corey Elijah, and today we have a great guest for you guys. I had a conversation with Gina Walkington. She's a Democrat out of Bristol, Wisconsin. She's ran for 61st Assembly District, as well as the 64th District in a special election. She's a community organizer, and she's helped out with a lot of the things that have happened recently in the area when it comes to like the different Black Lives Matter protests and things of that nature. We talked about a bunch of different things. You know, a key thing that I liked, we talked a little bit about universal basic income, as well as what we can do for the infrastructure, and her background, of course. You know, what got her into politics, what made her decide to become a Democrat. As you guys know, I don't lean left or right. You know, I like to stay in the middle, in that gray area, because anybody can bring you great information. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Gina Walkington. I think it was a great conversation, and expect more interviews from me. Enjoy this one, and there will be a lot more to come. So I'm here with Gina Walkington, a Democrat based out of Bristol, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
That's correct.
All right. How's it going today?
It's going well. Trying to stay cool, keep kiddos entertained, and get stuff done. Just a normal day.
Right. How's everything been for you? I know you have kids and a whole family and everything with the whole quarantine. How's that been going for you? I know it was kind of rough on me, especially when school shut down and everything, just trying to adjust to that whole situation. How's it been for you so far? It's been, what, 3 months, a little over 3 months now that we've been dealing with all this?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how things, seemingly quickly, I think things can become like a new normal, right? And so, yeah, in the beginning, it was very rough. I was working full time and on a campaign that we were. Gosh, when did it start? I think March 13th was when I found out my kids were going to be out of school. So we had a little less than a month to go on the campaign. So working full time, transitioning to, you know, three school age kids. E-learning, and then the stress of, you know, not knowing exactly what we were dealing with in terms of what COVID is and was stressful. But luckily, I have three really adaptive kids that they're troopers. So they did really good. Probably better than I. But no, I mean, I'm really thankful it's summer because they can at least get outside now. Run, get some fresh air, that sort of thing. So we're managing for sure.
Nice. So I just kind of wanted to touch base, especially since that's like the big thing that's been going on with everyone, but I want to focus more on you, kind of figure out what exactly got you into politics in general. You know, also you're a community organizer. You ran, I believe, for the 61st Assembly District. Mm-hmm. As well as the 64th district special election. Mm-hmm. Nice. So what got you involved in politics? You know, was it something that happened to you in the area? Is just something that you noticed just growing up? Is it something that your family was always involved in? Kind of just give us the scoop on you. What got you involved in politics in general?
So I actually grew up in a really, really small town in Iowa. My graduating class from high school was like 49 people. It was really tiny. My parents farmed. Pretty conservative town. But growing up, politics was not really talked about. My parents were definitely not politically active. In later conversations, that was kind of confirmed to me by my parents saying, like, yeah, we didn't really even vote until, you know, my dad ran for school board and was elected to school board, and that's when they kind of got more politically active, but I had already moved out by then. I mean, I feel like I've always had a mindset of or been able to pick up on, like, this, things don't feel right, things don't look right, this is an unjust situation, with, you know, all different kinds of facets, but again, not really having the words and the, I guess, knowledge to kind of frame it. It was just something that I had noticed. As I grew up, went into, you know, graduated high school, went into college, I moved from Iowa to Chicago, which was a huge culture shock for me. Although I loved it, and really, obviously really wanted to do it. That's when I started to become a little bit more aware, do my own research, you know, pay more attention to the current events and the political climate. And I've always tried to stay as informed as I can. But I, you know, was a young mom. I had my first son when I was, 22. And, you know, being a young mom, I have 3 boys now. You're just very busy. So we moved to Wisconsin when my first son was 1.5 years. We've lived here like 11 years. And once he went into school, I became more involved in the community. And in the school, I ran for some different positions in the PTA and was elected to those. And then when the election of 2016 happened, it's when I realized it felt very strongly that I just had not been doing enough, that I could have been doing more, I could have been talking more, I could have been volunteering for campaigns more. Like, I did some phone banking for some presidential campaigns, but that was it. And so, and I also felt, living out in Western Kenosha County, it's pretty conservative out here. My views are not conservative. I felt kind of isolated and really wanted some in-person solidarity. And so I met a couple of other women and we formed Forward Kenosha. And Forward Kenosha was formed really as a way for all of us to come together, try to cope with what was happening nationally and locally. At that point in time, we had our congressman was Paul Ryan, who was Speaker of the House. And it really kind of morphed into something much bigger than any of us anticipated, faster than we had anticipated, and started serving as a way for people to stay civically engaged, to stand up, or, you know, to come out and stand up for the things that they believed in. We did some protests, we did some town halls, a lot of just trying to connect people to their elected officials, whether it's on the local level. We did things with school board members, county board supervisors, all the way up to, you know, Mark Pocan and Tammy Baldwin on the federal level. So that is kind of a very long-winded way of, or explanation of how I kind of got politically active. And then from there, I mean, I joke with people that it's kind of a rabbit hole. It certainly was for me, because just once you're involved and kind of see how things work, you see really how, I don't know, to me, elected officials were always at an arm's distance. I never thought like I could be one, you know, or I could access them so easily. And sorry, my kiddo's poking his head in. But once you start interacting in that way, you realize that it is possible. And so yeah, I got involved with Planned Parenthood. I became a field organizer with them. And then people started asking me, what about the district that you live in? The 2018 election, the midterms are coming up. Nobody has run against this person very regularly. You know, who do you know? Who can we find to run? And so as I'm kind of going through the people I know, you know, someone else comes to me and says, well, why don't you do it? And I was like, okay, why not? I'm passionate. I live in this community. I have an experience of being a, you know, working mom, being a stay-at-home mom. I'm an empathetic listener. So then I decided to run.
Nice. And then, so what was it that made you decide on the Democratic Party when you decided to get involved with everything? You said you come from rural Iowa. I recall watching when you announced your candidacy that your mother is actually conservative. So growing up, even though your parents weren't politically active, you know, certain nuances when you have certain ideologies could pass on, but also education and things can help you, you know, realize different things as well. So what was it that made you zero in on the Democratic Party? What made you feel like that was the perfect fit for you?
So I actually don't feel like it is a perfect fit. I don't think that in most cases, especially in this two-party system that we have, I mean, really it's a two-party system. I think that it would be a stretch for anyone to say this is a perfect fit for me. But my core values, which are, you know, I believe that that everyone deserves an opportunity to grow and prosper as a person. I believe that certain things are human rights. I believe healthcare is a human right. I don't believe that people should be faced with the choice of putting food on their table or paying for a prescription drug that they need or their kids need, or weighing like whether or not, okay, my kid is sick, but I know that my copay, or I don't have insurance, so I know that this doctor's visit is going to be way more than I can afford. Can I wait a few more days? Like that's just not a choice that people should have to make, whether it's for their kids, themselves, their parents. You know, I believe that people should have a say over their own bodies. And those are just things that the two main parties right now don't agree on. So for me, it's really like a very much a social issues that make me gravitate towards the Democratic Party. And it's the video that you referenced with my mom, you know, it is so interesting. Like, I feel like it's given me, especially in the divisive climate that we're in right now, and it's only gotten worse since 2016. I've had a lot of conversations with people and seen on social media where, you know, it's really easy to kind of point the finger and say, like, you voted for Trump or you're a Republican, you are this, you are a racist, you are, you know, you fit in this box. Having grown up in a very conservative environment, my parents, my brothers, they're proud Trump voters. We haven't had a conversation recently, so I always hold out hope that pride is waning a bit. But it is, it gives me that perspective of it's harder to other people, right, to put someone in that box, because I know my parents at their core, I know my brothers at their core. Their behavior to me, I don't agree with on a lot of levels, but like I know that they are not bad people. So I feel like growing up in a different environment like that has helped me try to keep that perspective that it's easy to miss when you don't have close friends and family that have different views like that.
Right. So when you're, and I try to do the same thing, not only just like with family, but kind of the company that I keep. I like to involve myself with all different types of people. You know, I'll have a conversation with you. I'll have a conversation with someone that's a Republican, someone that may not even believe in the political system, whatever it may be, because you can always learn and get, you know, little nuggets of information or factoids from people that you may have never even thought of thinking about, because especially when you're dealing with different echo chambers, things like that, you kind of, your ideals get reinforced. And we've been seeing from a lot of people on both sides, I say, a lot of, you know, extremism in a way, just because people's ideals they're not having people come against their ideology. You know, they're not taking in other information. They're just listening to what their friends say, who all agree the same thing. So it's nice to hear somebody, especially someone that's actively involved in the community, that actually can see both sides of things and actually know people with a different ideology, and not just know them for like as an acquaintance, but actually are family with them and grew up with certain people with different ideologies that you can be civil with. And I feel like the people like you and people that have these different life experiences should be the people that step up, because they really are, you know, you guys are really the people that bridge the gap between both sides. Because in my opinion, most people operate within the gray area. Like even you said, like, you just feel socially the Democratic Party fits best for you. Not saying it's the perfect fit, but it's a glove that'll work, you know, for now. And if something were to come in the future, I imagine you would be open to maybe seeing if there's a new party or whatever it may be. Oh, just keeping an open mind to different information. So that's really cool to hear from you. I kind of want to get into some of the things that you kind of brought up, some of the stuff that you wanted to tackle, and hopefully we'll get a chance to, you know, be involved in tackling some of these things. A lot of these things that I agree with as well. One of them is infrastructure. Especially in Wisconsin here, we deal with, especially with the weather, you know, we have horrible winters sometimes. This past winter wasn't that bad, but then we have really hot summers too. It really does a toll on the infrastructure, on the concrete, and even just like some of the parks and things like that, just keeping things clean. We definitely need to invest more in these things. So I definitely agree with you on that. What was it that made you kind of zero in on infrastructure being one of your priorities? What makes you think that's something we need to tackle?
Well, one, I mean, just having drivable roads is something that's important. And when you're any community, right, or any person, it's not a convenient thing to deal with, whether it's bumpy roads, right, or roads that aren't maintained, or whether it's to the point that, like, it is causing damage on your vehicle. But especially in communities, you know, that are lower income, you know, having to replace the tires on your car, likely not in a lot of people's budgets, right? So it just really adds up, and it just really continues to chip away at, you know, anytime you might start to get ahead, right?
Right. You just, miscellaneous hole will happen, right?
Yes,
you
exactly.
End up back in. Right.
Mm-hmm. During my campaign, I live just off of a highway here, and it was under construction, and my best friend had his axle break, had to replace multiple tires on his car just because of the conditions of the road, and the road work just stopped at one point. And that's just not something that we can continue to have happen, and, you know, we definitely need to fix a lot of our funding issues and our priorities, right? I've said for a long time, and really just could not agree more with the framing of, like, a budget being a moral document, right? Like, it is an example of what your priorities are. And so really, like, diving into our local budgets, what are we prioritizing? Who are we prioritizing? State budget, and things like that. Infrastructure definitely needs to be one of them.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. Just, you know, I'm born and raised in Kenosha, so I've seen how things have been, and I drive on the roads, and it's not pretty. And, like, I understand to a certain degree with the weathering, things are going to happen, but we need to be on top of it more. And a lot of these projects, I mean, they take months and months and months. And then you see, you know, other countries like China, when everything happened with coronavirus, they built a hospital, you know, in a week or something like that. So it's one of those things, it just makes you think, like, are they allocating these funds in an area to help people make money? And, you know, they're just stretching it out as long as they can. And then, you know, there's the opposite end of, you know, if we don't take care of the roads and people are, you know, spending all this money on these miscellaneous repairs and things of this nature, and it's making everybody in the hole, they start getting behind on different bills, things of that nature, or even maybe they don't even fall behind. They're just not able to accumulate savings, and those savings that they're not able to accumulate, they're not able to, say, create a business or donate to charities, things of that nature. So there's, like, a trickle down effect that I feel like people don't necessarily take into consideration as well. when they're proposing certain things. So that's another real reason why infrastructure is super important. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, I feel like she really does have like a grasp of what really needs to change. So that's
and create, you know, it goes into also job creation, right? And you know, you brought up our climate here. Yes, we have extreme heat, like we are this week. We have extreme cold. But as a, I don't know, society, like, it kind of blows my mind that we haven't been able to innovate something that can withstand that temperature change. And I feel like if we were to broaden who we bring to the table in trying to develop these things and trying to come up with new ideas, we would be there. It's just historically been such a limited table, and limited as to who can be in the conversation. And same thing goes with, you know, creating new green energy jobs. So many things intersect, and our governments and our officials really need to kind of catch up to where we're all at here.
What are your, and this wasn't on my list, but I just randomly thought about this. What's your take on technology and how we could integrate technology into our infrastructure?
So that's honestly not something I've spent a ton of time looking into. I think that it is an area that, again, we could be much more innovative in. Also, there's a little bit of a part of me that, depending on what kind of tech we're talking about, right, I don't know, is a little bit of a slippery slope with, I don't know, I guess the unknowns of what happens when that tech goes down. But again, not having really looked into it and looked into any specifics, I think it's something that's a conversation absolutely worth having.
Okay.
Are there programs that you've heard about or ideas that you've heard about that?
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of talk. I'm fairly into technology. So there's been talk for years about smart city initiatives. I know I believe Foxconn created some form of grant for someone. I didn't follow up with it, so I'm not exactly sure what happened with it, but I believe there was talks of them having some sort of grant for someone to come up with a plan for a smart city initiative for Milwaukee, which I would assume would eventually, you know, trickle down into areas like Kenosha, since we are the fourth largest city in Wisconsin. Things like that I think are interesting because, I mean, there's a way you can utilize this to, for one, you know, decrease things with traffic and things of that nature, accidents and stuff like that. But then also be able to kind of keep track of, you know, pollution and things like that in a way that's more refined than what we have right now. You know, right now, everything is kind of, you know, Wild West. You know, people just drive their cars. And I'm not saying there should be limits on how much people should be able to drive, because I don't agree with that at all, personally. I feel like if people want to drive their car, they should be able to do it. But I feel like we should be able to at least know how much, you know, pollution is going into the air and things of that nature. So, I mean, and like I said, not just to bring up other countries all of the time, but China and their major cities, they're able to monitor how much pollution is in the air. Not saying that I agree with the designations of when you can drive in cities and things like that. But it's good to at least know where you have issues. Then you can act accordingly, you know, to remedy the situation, you know. And I'm really big into integrating, you know, technologies, not just windmill technologies and, you know, technologies for solar and things like that, but all different types of things that we can integrate into our park systems and things like that to kind of make it more known about the alternatives that we have for different energies and things like that. Because a lot of the pushback you get for things like that is just because people are uneducated. They're not informed on how things actually work and things of that nature. So,
yeah. I mean, anything that is going to make information more easily accessible to everyday people, I'm I'm for that.
So there was recently a bill proposed by some county board supervisors. It's a body cam bill. So full transparency, when they before they proposed the whole thing, they talked with me and one other individual just to get our take on the whole thing. You know, I didn't necessarily have a definitive position. In a way, I do support it, but in another way, I'm kind of on the fence about it, just because there are situations where there were body cams utilized, and still there was no justice served with the body camera footage there that we all were able to see. Also, things like, you know, dialogue can be manipulated by the person that's wearing the body camera. So I was just interested. What's your take on the body cameras? Like I said, I feel like it makes sense to have them, but there's, you know, there's pros and cons to everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, I am very much in favor of body cameras. I have not done a ton of research on it, but everything that I have experienced and seen and have read about it, I think it is just really important to have that accountability on both sides, right? And I think that there are times that the body cameras could absolutely protect the police officers that are wearing them. I think with body cameras, there's a need for, you know, a requirement to keep them on. I have heard of situations of, you know, officers turning them off or covering them up, not even knowingly about it, right? A friend of mine was just telling me about a friend of his who, I don't know, had shared some body cam footage, and the friend was like, well, why is your hand in front of it for half of it? The guy's like, because that's just where I naturally rest my hand, right? Which is a convenient excuse, which I'm not putting on this particular officer. It's also a convenient excuse. So we need to look into those things. It needs to be, you know, it needs to be a program that has some guidelines and has some rules, for sure. There is not a point in having it if it can be manipulated. Or I shouldn't say that. There is still a point. It is not as good if it can be manipulated. If they can just be turned off, then there really isn't a point. I'd definitely be interested in hearing more about, you know, the things that you had said about the ability to be manipulated. I think that there need to be consequences for that if that does happen. But all in all, I think accountability across the board is good. So yeah, I definitely I'm hoping that this resolution goes through. It's an interesting discussion for sure.
Yeah, and overall, for the most part, you know, from the people I've kind of just gauged in the community, most people seem to be for it. There was a few people that I talked to that kind of seemed like it was more of just the band-aid on the situation, legislation that was kind of just proposed because of everything that happened, which I can definitely understand that take as well, which it could be a mixture of all of that, you know. That's typically how these things go. But initially, when I talked to them about it, you know, I wasn't too well informed on everything that happened with Elijah McClain. And then I watched the entire footage of the situation with Elijah McClain and how they're talking about he had superhuman strength and they thought he was on drugs and all of this, to kind of just utilize that to justify what happened to him. You know, so that really was the point where I was like, man, do I agree with it? The stance of having the technology there that's recording, I feel like it's a given, like it should be there. If you go to a grocery store, there's cameras. If you stop at a stoplight, there's cameras at the stoplight. So why wouldn't there be cameras on the police as well? It seems like a no-brainer, but then, you know, if you dig deep into it, yeah, you know, there is things that can happen, and there's been situations that we've seen that makes you think, like, are we going to just waste our money by doing this? So it is definitely something that I, you know, I'd like to hear more about as well and get more in depth. And I hope that, you know, the there's more debates and you know, talks about this in the future. And I hope the community gets more involved as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that's something that just really, like broad view, that could be applied to every single issue is that there, in what I have experienced, just in the 4 years I've been involved at the pace that I have been, is that there is just such a disconnect between what happens in our government, local, state, federal, and how everyday citizens are paying attention. And I don't know how to bridge that. It's something that I've thought a lot about. You know, I would go to doors when I was working for Planned Parenthood and running for office. There were so many people who just really have no idea what's going on. And they've maybe heard some snippets, right? But they're really busy. They're working multiple jobs. They're taking care of their parents. They're taking care of their kids. They're, you know, whatever they're doing. And I get that. It's really hard to stay on top of things. I think it does take some really in your face things like we've been seeing over the last, month or more for sure. I haven't watched the video that you were referencing. I really should. It's a tough thing to watch. Not that they all aren't hard to watch. That one seems, I don't know, for me, like it's taking me a while. But I agree that I hope this isn't a band-aid. I would not be shocked if it was. I think that it is our responsibility as constituents, as community members, to keep pushing. I don't think it should be an excuse not to pass this. We just have to make sure it's only the first step and not the last step, you know? Mm. Yeah.
No, awesome. I agree with you there. You know, and these things, you know, a lot of things happen and then we get success or faux success with the situation and then people just forget about it. But a lot of these things, like there'll be an initial legislation, but we have to have follow-up legislation to make sure we get it exactly how we want it to be. So everybody has to just remain getting involved, keep getting out there, keep speaking up and keep, you know, asking questions, you know, and making phone calls and showing up when they're having the discussions, and then disseminating the information to other people. Cause like you said, a lot of the time things will happen and you'll have no idea about it. And you might know someone that's a really close friend and they just don't speak up. So we got to start giving everybody our information as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So in the area, there's definitely been a big boom over the past few years. Like I said, I've lived here my entire life. So I've seen when downtown was like a barren, not wasteland, but there really wasn't anything down there except for like Mike Bjorn's and something different. But there's been tons of shops popping up over the past decade or so, maybe a little bit longer than that. You know, there's been a complete revamping of the downtown area. And now there is a luxury high rises that are going to go down downtown. I kind of wanted to get your take on that. Me personally, my thing, just to be honest, I'm like, I get it. Like, it seems like they're trying to say, hey, if you have a bunch of money, come to Kenosha. But for the people that are from here, that have lived here their entire lives, have been raising families here already, you know, a lot of people that I talk to, especially people that I grew up with and went to school with, they're kind of like, who's it for? It's not for any of us. So what's your take on, you know, the expansion in Kenosha, not just job creation, but also, you know, things that are to dealing with the infrastructure. That's not necessarily just like the roads and things of that nature, but different businesses and the investments that they're making in the area. Foxconn could be one of them as well. You know, they're kind of like putting out there, they're saying, if you have a lot of money, you know, bring your money here. You know, Wisconsin is open for business and I understand, and there's a benefit to it, but you know, also, you know, who is a lot of this stuff for as well, you know?
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I feel like Foxconn is like could be a whole podcast unto itself. I think that the downtown area is beautiful. I've only, like I said, lived here for 11 years, and for the first half of it, probably, or a little less, I didn't come into Kenosha a ton, especially in the downtown area. But I've had a lot of conversations over the last 5 years, with people who, you know, history is fascinating to me and local history is fascinating. So I love hearing about Kenosha and its heyday when, you know, Chrysler was you know, really running, and it was really a union town and a middle class town. And then hearing, you know, of the downfall and the hardship that it's had. You know, it is a town that has been through a lot. People have been through a lot. It's great to have nice things. But like you said, who is this for? And it's fine. It's fine to want to attract all different kinds of people, but I worry that the people that have lived in Kenosha all their lives, the people that have really ridden those waves, or people who haven't lived here our whole lives, but, you know, chose Kenosha to put down roots and raise a family, I don't want them to be overlooked. And, you know, when you bring up Foxconn, the jobs that were supposed to be created from Foxconn that aren't being created, those employees that might be moving into the area, they're not going to live in that luxury high rise. They're never going to make enough money to do that. So I just, yeah, I feel like there's a big disconnect there. I don't know. I don't know how to tackle that problem right now. It's so complex. There's so many things that go into it. Building a luxury high rise is not one of them. I know Kenosha is also somewhat limited on its space in terms of the city, right? So we have to be making really smart and informed decisions. And when we have a homeless population that doesn't have anywhere to go in the winter still. I remember meeting with the mayor years ago when First Step was closed down. I think it was First Steps, and being assured that the issue was being worked on, and like years later, there's still nothing. Again, priorities really show through in our actions. And so it's something that, yeah, we need to really have a deep conversation about as a community.
And it's one of those things where, you know, I've been kind of, you know, going in and out of just, you know, checking in on it. And it's like you said, we have a growing homeless population. You know, when I was growing up, there was a couple homeless people that, like, everybody knew who they were. They, you know, they had whatever happened in their life, whatever it may be, mental illness or whatever it is. People would help them out if they saw them. You know, I would do the same thing. But over time, just growing up here, it's just increasing more and more and more. I live in the downtown area. I see homeless people under the bridge, you know, sleeping in the park by the marina and things like that. And I'm just like, man, they're really going to build luxury high rises here. And there's people that need help, you know, and there was the shelter that we had that was helping people. But I guess it was an eyesore, so they had to shut it down. And, you know, who cares that it gets, we have really cold winters here. And, you know, just a couple years ago, we had a winter where we had some days that was like negative 130 degrees, but we can have luxury high rises and no place to help them.
There was at least one death a couple of years ago that I know of, of a homeless person on one of those really cold nights. So yeah, And again, like everything intersects, you know, the way we approach mental illness and addiction, the mental health services that we don't have in our community is awful. And it just goes hand in hand with all of this too. Like we need to be putting some focus and some resources into that piece of it, I personally know three families who have, or either currently or have within the last year, maybe year and a half, been dealing with very serious mental health issues with a child, a young child, and it took weeks, if not months upon months, to find a place for this child to go, these children, other parts of the state, out of state. Like, how, I can't imagine as a mom going through any of that, but I can't imagine then having to take my child somewhere so far away, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of families, again, don't have the capacity, don't have the resources to even know where to start, or the connections to get to a good starting place, that aren't able to do that for their children. So it's just such a vicious cycle.
Yeah. And I see, I've noticed too, and it's kind of weird, you know, just how there seems to be this shift. And I don't know if it has anything to do with technology becoming so great that, you know, people can do remote work for the most part and can live more in rural areas. But just looking at, you know, different housing situations and things of that nature, it appears that it's becoming cheaper to live in the city than it is to live in a rural area. Now, I know Kenosha is considered a city, but it's still relatively rural in the grand scheme of things. But if you look at housing prices in, say, Milwaukee, compared to how they are in Kenosha, it is completely flipped in a way. And it's just kind of interesting to see the trends of how things are switching. Are we going to end up in a situation where people that can't afford to live in these rural areas that are getting forced out of the places that they've lived their entire lives are being forced into these cities that are going to be underfunded more than they have been ever before because all of the people that are in the middle class or in the upper class are moving out of those areas and going into the rural areas? I just feel like it's brewing up something that could be very disastrous, especially coming off of everything that's happened with the situation with coronavirus, how that's affecting the economy. And we honestly still don't even know how it truly is going to affect us, say, a year out from now. But with that, I kind of lean into an area that I wanted to bring up because I don't really talk much about where I stand with politics or anything like that. I don't have any kind of affiliation. I'm not even sure if I'm going to vote this year for the presidential election, just to be completely honest, because I'm but I was really zeroed in on a guy named Andrew Yang, who is a Democrat, mainly because of his stance on a universal basic income based off of the fact that technology is expanding at a rate where, you know, eventually so many people are going to be displaced from work. And now we see not even just technology can displace you, but, you know, just a miscellaneous disease or virus that we've never heard of can completely change the landscape of business, how we know it. So before we close out, what's your ideals on, say, a situation like a universal basic income? Do you think that's something that's even reasonable? Is that something that should even be in the cards? Is that something that we should look at maybe at a like a low scale thing, just to make sure people aren't displaced if they end up in situations like we've seen with this whole pandemic?
Yeah. So I'm still somewhat undecided, and maybe undecided isn't the right term. I think it's something that is probably necessary. Or yes, it is necessary now, especially with COVID. My worry in, like, when Andrew Yang was still a primary contender, and this was a big part of the dialogue, honestly, was this is never going to go over with people, because, I mean, I hear the way that we talk about the collective we, talk about people on social programs. And so I cringe a bit. that should never be a reason not to have something on the table. That was just kind of my own reaction to it. I think, and I just had this conversation last night, right now with COVID, a big conversation is, are schools going to open in the fall? And as a parent of three school-age kids, like, God, I would really love them to safely. I don't know that it's possible to do them safely because our schools are so underfunded. I honestly don't know. It's going to take some real creative work. However, you know, I am also the primary caretaker of my kids. And it really is something, this unknown is something that really has played into like, what am I going to do next? Kind of job hunting, but can I get a full-time job? I certainly can't get one that I have to be gone every day because I don't know if the kids are going to need coverage, right? Some people don't have that luxury. And we've seen other countries during this pandemic send out, you know, a set amount of money to their residents for them to stay home, for them to be able to support themselves, pay their bills, put food on their tables. And it wasn't a one-time tiny amount that we did, right? Mm-hmm. And had our federal government kept that up and really put something solid in place, we wouldn't be rushing our kids back to school in an unsafe environment and putting our educators at risk, right? So this is like a really small example of where, yeah, I think that it is kind of needed. Like you said, technology and automation is going to displace a lot of workers at a faster rate because we're too late to the party at this point, at a faster rate than we can retrain and get them back out there. So yeah, I feel like it is our responsibility to take care of each other and to take care of our neighbors. And this pandemic is just another example of how things can just be turned on their heads and entire industries are being wiped out, at least put on hold. So yeah, like on its face, I don't know how you implement it again, or how you come to an agreement because things are at such a stalemate all the time. But I do think that it's a necessary conversation, and one that I'm disappointed we aren't having right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my biggest take on it is, especially talking about, we're talking about reallocation of funding for, say, the police force. And right now we're at a point where we're kind of looking at everything, right? And I feel like there should be a big conversation where we bring all of the chips, we put them in the center of the table, and we actually talk about what we actually need, and then act accordingly, you know, because there's been a lot of funding in policing, which I understand, but at a certain point, like, do we really need like the MRAPs and extra robots and helicopters and, you know, all of this extra stuff? Like, maybe we might need it every once in a while, but every day we're not going to need this stuff. But every day people are, you know, being displaced from their homes. Every day people are getting fired miscellaneously for their jobs, for whatever reason it may be. It may be their fault. It could be the business is just downsizing now. We've been seeing a lot of that. Or they were in a situation where they just had to close because there was a pandemic, and now they can never open their doors again because they were forced into so much debt they were unprepared for. So I feel like it's, in my opinion, it's the duty of the people that are elected and the people that are in power, and also the duty of the people to make sure we have them held accountable to do these things, to put something like this in place. Because, I mean, we're the richest nation in the world. You know, we spend a lot on military, on sending people in other nations' money, you know, and it's not saying we shouldn't, you know, send money to other nations or do humanitarian things. We definitely should have aid, but we shouldn't be in a situation where our house is collapsing and we're just trying to take care of our neighbor, you know. Not saying that we shouldn't help them, because we definitely should, but how can you help someone else if you can't help yourself? So
right, and as I said earlier, I really feel like your budget is a moral document, right? Where we are allocating our funds, our resources, says a lot about our priorities and our morals as a collective. And you're right, if we are taking a look at these things, we need to take a look at everything. Because there are kids all across, our community, just our little community, right, that aren't going to eat today. They're probably not going to eat tomorrow. You know, they don't have the access to technology to access remote learning. What are we doing for these kids? We definitely need to reevaluate.
So before we close out, I just wanted to let you know, if there's anything that you wanted to bring up, anything that you wanted to say to the people at all, you know, it's the floor is yours.
Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks for having me. This was fun. So July 16th, which is next week, you had mentioned the county board resolution for body cams. That is going to be voted on in committee. I believe people will be able to give comments either live. I don't know how that works yet with the county board, what their procedures are. But if you have an opinion on it, either way, I encourage everyone to submit it, either contacting their county board supervisor via phone or email, coming to the meeting on the 16th. There should be information online if you search it. And then after committee, it'll go to a full board vote if it passes committee. So if you're into that issue, either way, I would definitely come have your voice heard. And then if anyone has any questions or ideas, anything that they want to share, I can be found online, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think it's just at Gina Walkington for all of those. So I'm always here.
Awesome. Well, I definitely appreciate you spending some time to talk today. If you ever need anything in the future, you know, if there's something going on, you need a platform to speak, definitely contact me. I'll definitely have you on whenever. This was a great talk. Everybody, make sure you check out Gina Walkington. Follow her on social media. Stay in tune because there's all different types of events that are going on. And you're going to want to be able to, you know, be in and understand and know where things are happening. Again, Gina, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. You are amazing. I think this went great. I mean, I don't think anybody can say anything negative about it. Personally, like I said, I stay in the gray area and I have no complaints about anything. So you're great. You're a great person. I imagine you're going to do great things in the future. So like I said, if you ever need anything, I'm here for you. Just let me know. And you have a good one, okay?
Sounds awesome. You too.